The Local Thread.
Welcome back, everybody, to La Prensa Habla. I am Dr. Linda Alvarado Arce.
And I am Jessica Molina. We are here with two really interesting guests today. We have Jose Martinez and Linda Ruiz Bringman. Our conversation today is going to be Latinos in education, which is very near and dear to all of our hearts here at the table. Mm-hmm. But before we jump into that, Linda and Jose, how are you?
We're great.
I'm good. Yes, thanks for having us.
Jose, why don't you tell us, we had the opportunity to meet a little bit yesterday, but please tell our listeners, mm-hmm. tell them more about you.
Yes. So I was born and raised here in Toledo, went all through school, went through TPS and then ended up graduating at Toledo School for the Arts. And then my journey took me to Indianapolis to complete my undergrad at Butler University. And now, but I've been living in Indianapolis and been visiting Toledo and family and still experiencing new parts of Toledo every time I come back. Toledo's always been a place to come back home.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. when did you graduate with your undergraduate degree?
In 2022, I graduated with my Bachelor's of Science in Arts Administration.
Nice. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. And being somebody from the community and being somebody that has known you since you were a very small child, mm-hmm. I am very proud of you. And I get so proud when I see Latino students that have been able to navigate mm-hmm. their, the academic success, being mm-hmm. able to navigate through that whole pipeline that we have, because that's what we've worked so hard in our community to do, mm-hmm. is to create these pathways for mm-hmm. students, just like Jose. Students that can attend some of our public schools and even the charter schools or any of our schools here in Toledo, but still then be able to find the scholarships and be mm-hmm. able to find the resources, because it wasn't that easy like you made it sound right now.
Right.
And I'm sure school wasn't that easy either mm-hmm. because you had to leave your family. And that's a big barrier, according to a lot of research, mm-hmm. For our Latino students, is then to leave their families. And so mm-hmm. later, and hopefully we'll touch on some of that, we'll be able to hear some more of your story.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And even that part is why it's always important for me to come back home and reconnect with my roots here. But yeah, I glossed over that. But it's been a journey. But I said my journey landed me, there.
Yeah.
And Linda Ruiz Bringman, you are from Toledo, and you are someone, like Linda Alvarado Arce was saying, who also is committed to helping Latinos and students go through the education pipeline. So can you tell us a little bit about yourselves and where that started,
Yes, definitely. And it was wonderful to hear your story first, because my story is a bit different, growing up in a different time. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in the old South End of Toledo. My mom and dad had 10 children, 5 boys, 5 girls, mm-hmm. and we all went to Toledo Public Schools. So Marshall, Jones, Libby High School. I did start college right away after school because I thought that was the pathway you take. Mm-hmm. You graduate from high school, you go to college, and that's it. Mm-hmm. What I didn't know was what I didn't know about college, how to enroll, how to stay in college, how to just navigate those things. So it is wonderful that we have those opportunities now for our youth. Mm-hmm. is how to navigate. And so that's what brought me back into education and working with young people. And I love talking to our youth about how to navigate things, how mm-hmm. to apply for scholarships, the opportunities that are out there. And it might be workforce, it might be college, mm-hmm. Military.
And you have such a unique personal experience because you have a twin sister. Yeah. So you and your twin sister actually experienced education quite differently. Are you open to sharing some of that with us?
Yes. And thanks for bringing that up. So I do have a twin sister. We are the 10, 9 and 10 of 10 children. And my sister, who is just a couple minutes older, grew up and was in special education courses. At the time, I didn't realize how different our paths were in school. So in school, those courses were in a different part of the building. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of the courses were in the basement. And mm-hmm. at the time, I didn't even think about that. Now I know how challenging it had to have been, how different it was. And just thinking about our students today mm-hmm. mm-hmm. and the opportunities they have and the supports that we do provide our students with special education and special needs.
Mm-hmm. Linda, can you share with everybody what your title is and, you know, where you work?
So I'm Linda Ruiz-Bringman, Assistant Superintendent of Student, Family, and Community Engagement with Toledo Public Schools. So I work with students, families, let them know what kind of supports, events, activities are there for our families and students.
And you identify as Latina, Mexican, Chicana, Latinx, Hispanic.
There is no wrong answer.
I identify as Hispanic. I've always identified as Hispanic. As I have, I think I've grown over the years. We had talked about this, that when I was younger, I don't think I appreciated my culture and my heritage the way that I do now. Mm-hmm. Why was that? I can't say, other than I don't think that it was not that it wasn't accepted. I don't know that it, maybe we hindered ourselves from expressing our culture, our language. Mm-hmm.
I think we were influenced by our external. I don't mean to speak for mm-hmm. you, but just in hearing your story, it was similar to what I experienced growing up as well. And survival at the time meant not embracing it. You know, don't speak the language, mm-hmm. just try to blend in. And so I know a lot of us who feel that, you know, sense of regret for our self-identity, but we have to also accept that there were external mm-hmm. influences on us as well.
I would agree with that too.
Mm-hmm. Because I think that's different because you were raised here in Toledo, and you were raised where, Jessica?
In Pemberville, Ohio, a little farm town.
I was raised in Defiance, but my parents were very different, and I'm not quite sure if it's because of, you know, how our parents migrated this way. My dad came from, you know, for the factories. And my mother went on to school. She went on to college. They started organizations because she didn't want us to be discriminated against. She wanted us to know our Spanish, so we taught Spanish classes. I was a little teacher. I have classmates from back home that'll still tell me, I remember when you would teach us Spanish and you were just in elementary school. It doesn't surprise me that you advocate so much for Escuela Smart, a bilingual school now. They always tell me that because it was always something that my mother and my parents and my grandparents even instilled, that we were not going to learn just English. Because when that border crossed our family, that was a big deal for our family. Mm-hmm. It was big. They were not going to give up everything just because they had citizenship.
And Jose, you strike me as somebody who is very accepting of yourself. Earlier, we were just talking about being grounded, being in the moment. So what was your childhood like? You know, how did you get there?
Yeah. Well, as like even in this conversation, I definitely identify as like Chicano. I grew up here in Toledo, and being raised by the grandmother I did, she was raised at a time where she saw firsthand of like the cultural erasure mm-hmm. of our Mexican culture. And then also later in her life, I think she also started to look back and see more so of how our indigenous culture was erased as well, growing up in Texas. Mm-hmm. My family came from the workers who migrated from Texas to the Midwest to work in the factories and everything. And so very, you know, hardworking people that I wasn't raised to speak Spanish because of that. It was seen as if I can navigate my world with an English accent, you know, I could mm-hmm. navigate it a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it was still utmost importance of like still learning the language and still practicing being community with our people. Mm-hmm. So I was still very much raised with that, going to Chicano studies classes since I was 10 with my grandmother. So she raised a kind of a firecracker of a with pride.
I want to name your grandmother.
Yes. Yes.
Dolores Rodriguez, longtime community activist here in Toledo in Northwest Ohio. Been around forever, was on lots of boards, started lots of programs, really had her heart out for the Latino community all the way to the end. So definitely want to give her props and her respect.
Yes, big flowers to her. She started her career in early education, working with the migrant workers' families open up the escuelitas for mm-hmm. so for the children can have education and not work in the fields. And so that was the start of her. She was all about education and bilingual education. And so that also overwhelmingly turned me into a natural educator. She always pushed me to go for my full education. And also you learn to teach, you receive to give, like that full, mm-hmm. Having full, being a full member of your community as well, mm-hmm. And being a full giving. And so all of that was thoroughly instilled from a young age.
Yeah. I did some work with her early on, probably around 2010, around there. I worked at Adelante at the time, and I just remember when you had the opportunity to sit at the table with Dolores Rodriguez, mm-hmm. you brought your A game. You were sitting yeah. up and you were participating. So what an honor to have known her, and what an honor to you to have grown up with her. Your story reminded me a little bit about, I remember being, well, first I remember elementary school, right? And I was a migrant farm worker. And at the time you have ESL, ELL classes, and the model was that you just get rid of your English, right? So success meant no longer speaking Spanish. Fast forward to when I was in high school and I was taking a Spanish class in high school, and I felt like I had to relearn all of that. I remember having such a animosity, even at that age, towards the system of like, you took my Spanish away from me, and poor Spanish teacher, I like took it out on her. You know, you took my Spanish away from me, and now you're grading me on how well I speak it. Like, it's just such a reality.
Well, I never
of
thought about that.
Right, yes, right. Yes, it's such a reality of what our students go through.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Yes.
But we have schools like Escuela Smart now. Escuela Smart is within the Toledo Public School System. It's one that I had the privilege of helping launch initially when it was a charter school. But Linda Ruiz Bringman and Linda Alvarado Arce, you're both with Toledo Public Schools in some capacity. Can you share a little bit about Escuela Smart?
Well, I'll share that the wonderful thing about Escuela Smart is they are so embracing of all their students, of their culture, embracing of their language. And we encourage students to, of course, keep their language. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. you need to learn English. However, that language is very valuable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we make sure to say, make sure you're speaking Spanish. When I speak to parents, I say, that is so wonderful that you've educated your children and they're growing up knowing the Spanish language. Mm-hmm. Continue that. And when I talk to students, I tell them the same thing. That is so wonderful you know Spanish. I don't know Spanish. I understand Spanish fluently. My mom and dad spoke Spanish, but by me not speaking it, I'm not able to speak it fluently. Mm-hmm. So please continue to do that. And you can just see their faces light up when you're talking about that. Mm-hmm. Or when you ask them, what is that word? They really do love that.
Yep. And research really does show, too, that learning another language is just better for cognition. It's also creates artists and, you know, creativity. And you could go back to, like, so much theory that could go around the benefits of knowing your own language. Mm-hmm. But also the benefit of the confidence that knowing your own language and understanding your culture brings. Because as I was listening here, you can go to school, but you begin to feel like you have to erase a lot of your culture, like you have to hide behind it, or you shouldn't know your language, or, you know, you're only going to excel if you speak English. And those are all myths. Mm-hmm. None of that is accurate, because actually when you're proud and you know your language and you feel good and you can master one language, you can then easily master a second language, and then you're feeling good about your school too. And so one good benefit of Escuela is that when you go in there, you'll see Latino leaders' names above the doors. You'll see pictures that are very reflective of the community and our culture and things that you can be proud of. You can go into the library and see a lot of bilingual books in there as well. ALAS, which is the nonprofit board at the school and the community have invested a lot of time into it. There's a preschool there. We have a mariachi. You did mariachi, Jose, over at Toledo School for the Arts.
Yeah.
We would love to do a mariachi in high school. Yes. Just watched a movie the other day, Going Varsity with Mariachi or something. Mm-hmm. Wow. The scholarships and the advantage of being able to get, you know, into school. Didn't that help you?
Well, it's a celebration of your culture. And to have that in your home school, that's a, even seeing that my younger brother went to Toledo Smart, and seeing being your culture walking through the halls, and then also then for me in high school going to the mariachi, it was like you get to walk into a space and then practice your own culture. Mm-hmm. And then I'll also even say I'm a music teacher as well. Mm-hmm. The ability, which in Indianapolis, there's a very large, it's where I live now, a very large Spanish-speaking population, and where I was teaching, it was a program with a lot of Spanish-speaking families. I would say from the holistic family perspective of being able to communicate to families in Spanish is a larger increased success of the student. Mm-hmm. And from the teacher side, understanding of seeing an involved parent, when you're not able to speak the language of the parents of your students, you're not able to communicate about the education. Right. You're not able to communicate thoroughly about their student success or what they can do. And these families want to be actively involved. And so being able to speak to that's also a huge determinant of how well a student can do, is if how well the teacher can communicate with their parents and their families as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's such a good and timely topic that I so want to pick up after our break that we are going to be having here. Because we have a lot of things happening at the school right now, a lot of things happening throughout the district, and a lot of things and ideas that the board has and the community has for the school. And so I'd like to tap into your brain there here in a little bit when we return. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks.
Welcome back to La Prensa Habla. This is Jessica Molina. We are here with Linda Ruiz Bringman and Jose Martinez, and of course, Linda Alvarado Arce. And Linda, I know you're excited to share some of the ideas that you have with Escuela or just the public school system. So let's hear it.
Well, we ended, and I wanted to pick it back up. We ended talking more specifically about Latinos in education. And this second part of the show that we always do, we kind of hone down more closely on a topic. And so I wanted to pick back up, Jose, what you were talking about, you know, being in Indianapolis and, you know, the things that you've seen over there and experienced. And I really would like Toledoans and us here in Northwest Ohio to kind of hear what's going on in other places. So if you could share what's happening over there, maybe we can use some of that here.
Right, right. Yes. And I'll say, Indianapolis, it's a very a large immigrant population coming from. It's probably the first time I've got a lot of like Nicaraguans, Costa Ricans, Venezuelans, and so a larger pool of Latinos who are settling in Indianapolis, and of course a large Mexican American community. As far as you know, school system right now, they're battling a lot of cuts in the public school system. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's a lot larger push for the charter school system, which, you know, is still
We could talk about that for
that's
hours.
That's a whole, you know, political
Linda
topic.
Already, positioning herself like, give me some ideas too.
No. And so that is happening in a larger discussion, but I will say, you know, being a educator in the city and working directly with a lot of larger other Latino educators as well, there's also another Latino culturally infused school called Monarca Academy. Mm-hmm. And it's very similar to Toledo Smart, where it is intentionally infused of our Latino culture. Instead of PE, they do capoeira. They're doing, you know, and I got to tour, and I got to see this, you know, school kind of blossom. I started my internship with a charter school nonprofit, and so we helped incubate executive leaders to open up charter schools in Indianapolis. So I got to see, you know, firsthand of these leaders setting in their ideas, and then also my role as intern was ingraining them into the community of like being aware of, you know, community hub spots and everything. But during that time, I got to see more so of how intentional some of our leaders were interacting with the communities and also interacting with the communities there. And there are a lot of great leadership coming in through, and educators that are creating beautiful communities.
Now, and you did mm-hmm. some programming that was specific to interrupting racism for mm-hmm. youth. So what were some of those programs?
Yeah, so I'm a workshop facilitator with Child Advocates, and it is a full child advocacy agency that started from like mediations, attorneys, like liaisons that help any child through the system. And then where I worked was in the, we had to call it the community engagement is now where we're flying under the radar of the anti-diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The bad word, say it real quick.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so that's how, you know, we've flown throughout the last year. But I've been, for the last 3.5 years, leading workshops with Indianapolis teachers, administrators, from policemen to librarians who are going through 2-day workshops on interrupting racism. And then from the perspective of children, because mm-hmm. Our sole purpose of that was we saw in the child welfare system of children entering state custody, large percentage were Black and Brown students. Mm-hmm. And in a state where everyone is obligated to report abuse mm-hmm. and neglect, mandated anyone over reporters. The 18, everyone's a mandated reporter, mm-hmm. which means it's the general public who are making these reports on abuse. And mm-hmm. we have a bias of seeing where white families can seem as a norm, and then, you know, reporting Black and Brown students in a higher rate, mm-hmm. which also, in the other sense, we're leaving white students in dangerous situations mm-hmm. because of our bias.
They're maybe under-identified.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so the 2-day, full-day workshop of kind of diving into these conversations about how we are raised, our socialization, mm-hmm. To some of the history of the foundation of our country mm-hmm. and what we come to familiarize what we, you know, use today as race. And this is, nice. We do the same workshop with adults that we do with our youth. Any adults who have youth in their lives can then recommend their youth to be part of it. Mm-hmm. And that's when I say of youth right now, seeing, actively hearing their perspectives, their ideas, and being given this conversation, or being invited into a conversation is, youth need spaces mm-hmm. to be able to just, one, being fed real and honest mm-hmm. conversations about our world, about our society, mm-hmm. That's outside of their home and school spaces, because mm-hmm. they have brilliant ideas and they mm-hmm. are making connections faster than any of the adults that we have having those. Mm-hmm. And so that's the biggest thing. And, you know, my work in working with youth is like it's a dire need for to create spaces for youth to have honest, mm-hmm. open conversations with adults, because in a life mm-hmm. where we cannot... We can't share them or their future. We can't tell them what their future looks like. Mm-hmm. At this point, this country, we can't promise them much. Oh,
right.
But so the next best thing we can do is co-create with them and create spaces where adults and youth are co-creating something together.
There's a lot of fear right now, right? And I think if you're an outsider, you didn't live the experience, it's easy to say, you know, racism isn't blatantly happening in schools. And it might not be, you know, to the level that they're interpreting in their minds, but I think something as simple as we as kids were so often asked to be interpreters for our parents. You know, mm-hmm. we closed the gap as students in kindergarten, first grade, second grader, that the system itself could not close. Mm-hmm. Linda, we talked a little bit about that with your experience. Do you remember filling that gap for your parents and the school system as a kid?
Yeah, and just think, when you're a child, you don't think about that. You're not mm-hmm. thinking about what you're doing. But now reflecting back, of course, if my mom or dad was at school, I'm making sure they're understanding what that educator's saying, and then also making sure the educator, I'm mm-hmm. translating what my father's saying. Now, they spoke English. Mm-hmm. But again, just making sure that they truly understood what was being said by that educator, mm-hmm. Translating that. Mm-hmm. Again, not thinking about it at the time, but it is big for a young person to have to do that.
Yes, and I have a friend, mid-30s, she said that when her sister was in school, she didn't understand Spanish that well. And so she had to use the restroom. And the teacher refused to allow her to use the restroom. Now, this was like, you know, 20 years ago, not that long ago. The teacher refused to allow her to use the restroom unless she said it in English. And she didn't know English. So she ended up having an accident in school as a student.
And that even that experience, it just built so much shame within even like what is subliminally ingrained in youth's minds of what is acceptable to be around, you know, figures like, you know, your teachers. And then even that experience like that, then it just reinforces that feeling of shame that I can't say this in Spanish or I can't say this in English.
Well, we were talking about this Escuela Smart just as one example and how we embrace their culture, their language, and making sure that they keep that language. That makes them feel welcome in the school. That makes their families feel welcome in the school. We have activities and events at the school, and it is packed. Families come, they're in the school, and they're very active because they feel welcome, because we do encourage and want them to be proud of their culture and their language.
Yes, I would say Latinos have a lot, from my experience, you know, running a charter school, working in the public school system. I was a teacher here in Ohio, down in Texas. So I have a lot of experience that I'm speaking from. Latinos are active in education. I remember even just recently when we were hearing the report from Escuela Smart, they had 100% attendance, or maybe it was like one parent shy of 100% attendance at the parent-teacher conferences. That's nearly unheard of. We value education to a level that I would say is unprecedented.
I would agree, and I would say that parents want the best for their children. These Latino parents want more for their children. They want them to have a good education, a good career, whatever that may be, whatever pathway they may take. And to your point, they do go above and beyond to get their children to school. I know the first day of school, it was this past year, parents who took two buses to get their children, of course, we provide busing, but they were just starting that day. They took two buses to get their child to school, and the principal, very nice and welcoming to the parents, said, it's all right if you're a few minutes late for the next week or so. We'll work with you. And that parent said, absolutely not. We will make sure that we take that 15-minute earlier bus, and we will make sure that we're here. It just shows the commitment that our parents have for their children.
I know families that walk, you know, mile, 2 miles. They go drop their children off. They you know, pick the walk over, pick them up, and they go back. No, education is very important to our culture. But I kept hearing, and this was from earlier as well, I wanted to bring this up, is this, we're talking about how important it is that we speak to our parents and that, you know, we're there and that we know the language. But now we're at a time when there's all these devices out. There's all these translation devices. What do you think? Do you think they can replace a human being?
No.
Even that's like we're talking experience of like learning Spanish from in school, even from an outside person, some, you know, possibly from someone outside of our culture who is not teaching a language with a culturally infused way. That's where I was like, that's where I don't even think maybe we could get close with technology, but it's still not the same of it's maybe not even the language that is the bonding agent, is just people being closer with another one's culture that helps foster larger success. I don't know if that's like what you're getting to, but that's where I think it's more of than just speaking the same language, but also just having somebody more knowledgeable about your cultural upbringing.
You know, it could be a useful tool, right? You know, if I didn't understand Linda and I had empathy for her and wanted to engage with her in a conversation, we could use a device and I could still make eye contact and we could have a nice warm conversation, versus what we probably saw more so growing up, where if you don't speak my language, what an inconvenience it is to me. And then and then in that role, if you have that type of attitude, the device is just a mechanism that you have to use because you have to talk to this person. So absolutely not. The device cannot replace empathy. It could be used as a tool to foster the communication, but the welcoming attitude still has to be there.
I'd say the welcoming attitude and being there, being visible and being present and being at activities, events, and over and over. And I grew up in the old South End. I lived there forever. But it still took me time to be accepted in the community again. And the only way I was able to do that was attending events, activities, joining organizations, making sure that they knew I care and I want to be there, right?
And I think that's part to us having to demand and almost just show up to be at the table, to be recognized, to be heard, and to be seen. Because I think it's important for our students, our youth, our next generation to be able to say, oh, I recognize you, or I had the same plight as you, I can, relate to what you're trying to say and do. Because there's been many, I'm older, way older than Jose. Nobody knows that right now, but he's still a youngin. But I remember times when we weren't at the table, and when I would go to classes, I'd be at the university and there weren't professors that, had a similar culture or life that I had. So, and teachers all my life, having grown up in Defiance, Ohio, I didn't have any Latino teachers either, So it's important, I think, for us to be able to show up and to let people know and let the next generation know that, hey, we can obtain these positions as well. And we are very highly educated and we can navigate the system. And it doesn't matter how many things they take from us, scholarships, affirmative action, all these things. You can shut all these doors, but we're still going to succeed.
And we can still attain.
Still.
And having that visibility is huge. And I was like, even as respective working with a lot of Latino students as a male Latino music teacher, then being also a musician, seeing on stage, I know my niece watching me on stage perform with the orchestra, it changes something, in a young person's brain, where in growing up, that was not seen, going to the Toledo Symphony and not seeing any Latinos in the crowd, but then being able to then be that person in an orchestra and like, oh yeah, that looks like my tío up there.
And it's not that we don't aspire to do those things. It's almost like the door, we don't even know the door exists.
Right.
And I say, I was a 4.0 student in high school, editor of my newspaper. I told you I like journalism. Never once did my counselor come to me and say, hey, what are you going to do for college? And I never thought about it because my mom and dad didn't, my brother and sister didn't. And I don't think that you need to, I think that you can be successful in life and not go to college. But for me, that was totally, the writing was on the paper, writing was on the wall. That was my trajectory. And we just don't even know, sometimes we just don't even know that it's a possibility. I was thinking as you were talking, you're really like a unicorn in that.
That's for real.
Yeah. Yes. In so many ways. But 1/4 of Latino adults have gone to college to get their degree. And of those 1/4, 60% are women. And so we, while we're invested and we're here to work hard, that doesn't always translate to going to college, which again, like I said, is fine. I know a lot of successful people who didn't go, but we just need to know it's an option, right? And sometimes we don't even know.
Yeah.
The best part is walking into a school and saying, for me to tell a student, this was the school I went to. This is my school. And I'm now working for Toledo Public Schools, and I'm a Toledo Rocket, and then their eyes light up. Oh, okay. She was here at one time.
Speaking back to Escuela Smart, we were talking about the pictures and the names on the doors. One of the things that I was most excited about is when you walk into the gym, you'll see athletes, pictures of Latino and Latina athletes all around the gym. And I remember thinking, like, where are the sports where we're not represented? Let's try. Of course, because of my allegiance to Canelo Alvarez, I was going to put him up on the wall. But I kept trying to think, like, what are the other sports? And it's because we need that exposure, and our kids and our students need to see that.
What an important conversation. I wish we had more time to continue to talk about it. But we're going to have to wrap this up and get ready for our favorite next section, which is to eat. And eat something that is reflective of our culture. And that will be a surprise, and we'll bring that right up next when we come back. Thank you. Welcome back. Now to my favorite section, the food. So I'm very excited to have Sweet Havana here, a very new restaurant, Cuban restaurant here in Toledo. We've never had a Cuban restaurant before, so this is a big deal for Toledo. And we have one of the owners because I do know Oscar and his wife both own the restaurant, but Oscar Gomez is here. And I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your restaurant. What did you bring today? And just share this wonderful food that we see before us.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys. Well, this restaurant has been open 6 months already. We opened in July 8th, and it's been a challenge. Not too many people knows about Cuban food. So we try to bring the culture, the food, the season from the island. And a lot of people come and check the place, and it's very, very pleasant to us to see the reaction about the food, you know, how they taste, how the flavor is different to the other kind of Latino foods. And but people is excited, and we are happy to be here in Toledo. You know, like I say, it's been a challenge, but so far so good.
Yeah, I can only imagine. A lot of people must be really used to just Mexican food.
Exactly.
It's and so popular. They probably want to always compare your food to Mexican food, but Cuban food, even as I'm looking at it right now, is very different than our Mexican food.
Correct.
You brought with us a guacamole with...
Pork belly.
Yep, I'll let you go.
I bring 4 different samples today. The first one is a guacamole with pork belly. The guacamole and is by order, so it's always fresh. We never freezer or you know the food. It's very fresh. We made it in the moment. The second platter is ceviche.
Oh, but wait. On the guacamole, you have tostones, too.
Oh,
because that's my favorite part of that dish. And you even have on your menu a tostones, stuffed tostones, which I have to always order. But what tostones are, can you explain it? They're the plantain. I don't really know how to make them.
It's like a green plantains, and we smash it, and we fry after that. So normally when you go to the Mexican restaurants, you get the guacamole with chips, right?
Yeah.
We turned it differently. We decided to go with tostones. They make like a different flavor, and it's a special platter in the place, in mm-hmm. our place. And it's really popular. You know, people like it, like I said, because the taste is so fresh, and we made it with a lot of love. So, you know, the perfect mm-hmm. portions, the perfect season is there. It's not as spicy as but it's really good. You know, you have to try it to see the difference between
because
the others.
Cubans, do they have spicy food?
It's very interesting because a lot of people believe that because it's Havana, our place is sweet Havana, and believes that it's because it's Havana. Havana is like pepper, habanero,
chili.
For example, and everybody believes that it's like a very spicy food. But normally the Cubans doesn't eat spicy, you know. Even black pepper for the Cubans are very spicy, you know.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. And our food is very care about the how we cook it, because a lot of people right now in these times doesn't like to be very seasoning or very greasy, you know. Everybody says is try to eat more healthy than before. So our food is really healthy, you know. And we have eggplants, we have shrimps, lobsters, paellas. We have a little bit of everything in the place. But
yes, I love tostones. I eat the tostones all the time. And then you were talking about it's made with love. We do a word of the day every time we have a show. And we were talking about trying to figure out the word, and you said the word when you cook your food is with sazon.
Yeah.
And that means, because when you said that to me, I was thinking, you add the little seasoning of sazon in your food? And you said, no, that sazon means?
Means the flavor that you put in the food. Mm-hmm. You know, the flavor, the different. Because if you go to different restaurants, you're going to see it like, you're going to have very like a special place to go, right?
Uh-huh.
Because it's the sazon. You know, when we say this sazon is really good, that means the flavor is good.
Oh,
so the sazon cubano is completely different to the sazon mexicano.
Uh-huh.
Sazon mexicano is more greasy, more spices, more chile, you mm-hmm. know, peppers. And us is we just use different flavors, you know, different seasons. That's why the food tastes different.
What kind of seasonings do you use?
We use cominos, you know, cumin. Uh-huh. We use a lot of cumins. We use the more pepper that normally we use is serrano and jalapeno. We use a little bit to kick the food.
Oh, you know? Wow. I've never tasted any of that in the food.
How does the food taste? And let me know what you think.
Right.
Please, it's been sitting in front. I've been waiting. Exactly. Usually people dive right in right away. You're the first most preserved.
Right. So I'm really interested in the guacamole. What is the chip? It's not a chip.
It's a tostón. That's the green plantain. It's
green plantain.
Yep.
We smash it and we defry it.
Yep.
After that.
And then the other thing that looks like a deep fried cheese.
Okay.
What is that?
It's a croqueta cubana. I'm Mexican, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm Mexican. I'm born in Aguascalientes, Mexico.
But your wife is Cuban.
But my wife is Cuban.
Yes.
And the more closer, this is the croquetas a la mexicana. Normally, they make with the tuna, you know, mix it up with tuna and some different breads. And the difference between these croquetas and the other ones is we use four different kinds of cheeses inside. So this is a cheese croquettes melted with four different cheeses inside.
Oh, and see, you're Mexican, but you're Mexican, and I only know this because I've talked to you, yeah. Is that you're Mexican closer from the water side than not the mainland side. So that's why you would add tuna and other.
Exactly.
Because you wouldn't find something like that in our typical Mexican, northern Mexican restaurant in Toledo.
Right.
Yeah, because of the region in which you're from. So you have kind of mixed some of your Mexican, regional Mexican with your wife's Cuban.
Correct. This is a little twist.
Oh, I never knew that. Yeah. I thought it was just all Cuban.
No. Well, I mean, it's like 90-95% Cuban.
Oh.
When we have only like a 5% influence because
of you. Because you had to have put a little bit in there.
Exactly.
A little sasson in there.
You know, a little bit something on my side, you know. But 95% for sure is Cuban. Even the kitchen is from Cuba. So all the cooks are Cubans.
Wow.
So the food is completely authentic.
Wow.
You know, in the beginning, when we start with the project, the chef, right, because he's a Cuban chef, he was little mad with me because I tried to tell him, like, because we have tacos, right, but tacos a la cubana, because all the meat is from Cuba.
Uh-huh.
What we use is we made the tortilla fresh in the house, so it's made it in the restaurant. And there's the twist, the Mexican, but the food is Cuban, so it's tacos a la cubana.
Yeah.
So it's a great mix, and people, when they try it, they realize the difference between Cuban food and Mexican. It's completely different.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of surprise for the people when they see the menu and say they saw the tacos inside in the menu.
Yeah. So how is it? How's it tasting?
The guacamole tiene mucho sazón.
All right,
yes,
fresh.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
I do love the flavor of the. What is it again?
For tostón.
Tostón.
Oh, I know tostones are so good. I wish I knew how to make those.
And with the pork belly too.
Mm. And the pork belly makes difference.
Right.
It's like the chicharrón, but the meat part of the chicharrón.
Yeah.
I know, not just the fatty part.
No.
That's why you know it's really
right.
good.
So a little bit healthier, right?
Yeah. And then you brought a Cuban sandwich.
Cuban sandwich is a more popular dish in the restaurant because everybody knows Cuban sandwich. So when they came and see the menu, they feel comfortable with the Cuban sandwich because it's a new offer in the city. So a lot of people has to come and try it and see. Oh, I like this and I like that. And next time I want to try the shrimps. And next time I want to try the ropa vieja.
And what comes
really good.
In the sub? What do you have in it?
Inside is pretty much the basic Cuban sandwich. It's made with queso, cheese. We
what
put
kind
like
of
a
cheese?
four different. We use Swiss cheese.
Okay.
So we put four slices. Swiss cheese is very cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
Pork shoulder. we use pork shoulder and the Cuban sandwich, and it's so tender because we cook it for 13 hours every day.
Wow.
So it's very, very, very soft. And we made it with the same, we don't use grease, you know, we cook with the same juices from the same pork.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
We just put some spices on top of them. The chef's secret spices and
the chef's secret spices, the secret sazon.
Secret sazon. And we cook it for 13 hours. That's why it's so tender.
And it has mustard.
It has mustard.
And it's done on a French bread.
Exactly. We prince it. We prince it to make more crispy.
And is outside. That because there was an influence in Cuba at some time? I had this discussion with my husband last night. With, did the French go over there? Like, how did this happen?
Originally, these Cuban sandwiches is created in Tampa, Florida. You know?
Oh, really?
And it's coming from Tampa, and it's a lot has influence from Italians when Cubans with they cross the border to Miami and start living Orlando area, Tampa area. So they was working together between Italians and Cubans. And some points the Cubans bring the bread and the Cubans bring the pork. And they match it together, and they create the Cuban sandwich after that. They're getting very popular in Tampa area.
And it always has mustard?
Always.
Yeah, which is another ingredient that I thought was different, too, because Mexicans, we don't use mustard. Uh-huh.
I love mustard,
we don't use it, but, you know, somehow it ended up in the Cuban sandwich.
Exactly. And also come with pickles.
I don't know the other one. Yep. I always like pickles
inside.
Yep.
And sometimes from Tampa style is with salami. They use salami.
Really?
They put salami inside also.
Know that.
You know, because we had a lot of customers. Can you make one Tampa style? Like, what do you mean? Yeah, Cuban sandwich, Tampa style. What's the difference? Can you add salami? Of course.
What?
We have salami,
I never heard that.
We can create some Tampa style Cuban sandwich also. Just in request, you know, to create more like a tradition of the way the Tampa area like it.
If I go to Tampa and I say, can you make it Toledo style?
It's going to be without salami. It's not going to come with salami, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And then you brought a ceviche.
Ceviche, exactly. Yep. It's mixed up with fish and shrimp. Normally, the ceviche, Mexican ceviche, is normally just with fish. What we mix it up with shrimp. Shrimp and different onions, you know, a little bit of serrano.
It tastes really fresh.
Jose's having a blast. This is like buffet.
Yes, it's
really good.
The fish tastes very fresh, too.
Thank you. Yeah, like, and our kitchen is so small, so we have to make the food daily. So it's very fresh. You can if you go to the restaurant one day and order, for example, the rice with the beans, it's mixed up, it's called what's the name of the
paella?
No, the paella is another very popular one.
Oh, yeah, but the paella, you have to, you have to wait 45 minutes or something, it says
it's
on the menu.
Because we made it from the rice.
It.
Yeah, it's fresh. We use the shrimp, the lobster, the what else? Fishes, different fishes.
But so, do I have to call in advance?
If you want to order, call in advance and we can start making it for you. So when you arrive to the restaurant, pretty much the food is going to be ready. Or a lot of people like to get with wine, glass of wine, talk with your wife. You know, you have a special event and you need to talk a little bit. So you can start with a glass of wine.
You're going to break up with somebody.
Exactly. Or when you want to make a good business, you know, you want to bring the person there and talk first about whatever you want to do. And we can start making the paella. The chef doesn't like to have everything cool to reheat. So he is very particular with the food. He will take care of the food, and he like to make everything super fresh because his signature is in every single dish. So he want to make sure that every dish is well, you know, cooking for everybody.
You mentioned rice. How is Cuban rice different?
We have two different kind of rices. It's called congri. I forgot the word, but it's congri. That's a mix of white rice and black beans. So it's gonna be like a black rice with mix because it's mixed with black beans.
Because what happens when they use the black bean, the water from the black bean, I've asked this question before, they and then put the rice. We're in for us Mexican, we kind of brown our rice a little bit first, and then, you know, we add our tomato, and that's why it comes out a little orange. Mm-hmm. Theirs, they put it with the water from the black beans that then changes the color of the rice, because then the rice is being cooked within that.
That's really good, and it's so different. You're not going to find, here in Toledo, probably in one more place, you're going to find that dish, but not in too many places. So we are blessed to have this dish in the house. And the other one is white rice. You know, every in Cuba, it's like white rice is eating like staple. Tortillas.
Yep.
You know, it's everybody has to bring in the platter white rice. Mm-hmm. It's very important for Cubans.
Yep.
You know, I realized that with my wife is Cuban. I've been with her for 13 years, so I realized that she don't eat nothing if it's not, doesn't come with white rice. So it's like me when I eat tacos, right? Tortillas always has to come with the food. So it's very interesting, and we invite you guys to try it, to see the difference. I forgot to bring some of those today.
No,
but maybe
it's
next
good.
Time.
No, it's good. Sure. You brought plenty. And it's really nice to be able to hear all the differences between all of our cultures and the different rices, or the plantain and the chips and the guacamole and all of that. Okay. So that's all really nice. So, Oscar, can you share with us, for anybody that's listening, where are you located?
We are located in 1855 Sol Reynolds Road and in Diamond Plaza. It's in the same place as the Olive Garden is, so everybody knows Olive Garden. So I always help Olive Garden to promote it too. So Olive Garden is in the same plaza, and it's 1855 Sol Reynolds Road.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the wonderful food. Thank you, Linda Reese Bringman, for being here as well, representing TPS and education and Latinos. And thank you, Jose Martinez, también. Thank you for your beautiful stories, and thank you for being such a success for our people here in Toledo. You know, we're real proud of you, so keep going. Keep making us proud. And thank everybody for listening. So, till next time, La Prensa Habla.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.